Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture with my co-host and friend, Michael Rakia, author of many books, and a lot of you are really loving his latest book, Many Voices, One Mission, Group Soul Wisdom from the Joseph Perspective. And I will tell you, Michael, I love this book too. It reads a lot different than the other books, and it makes it even more fun.
Yes, that's great. Thank you, Maria. Yeah, of course, there are many voices in there, many different viewpoints on the same theme.
Well, lots of different personalities, and they're all fun personalities. A couple of them seem very familiar to me.
Yeah. Right.
So I'm like, okay, I love that whole boats story, but we'll be talking about that in the show. But I do have, you know, I do have questions from listeners. And one thing, and it's interesting because I discussed the same things almost with my astrologer, Joe Anthony, on our astrology show. So it's not something that seems to be going away. And it evolved into basically being, I guess, today's topic of the show. What I'm finding is a lot of people no longer want to stay on this planet. They just don't want to live here anymore. Are you finding that from anybody you're talking to?
Yes. But I think that the problem is that if you're spiritually aware, there is a weariness to the earth at the moment that is getting into people's bones, as it were. And, you know, even if this is the last time that we're here, and please God it is for many of us, we still have to complete the arc that we've started by coming here in the first place. So I think what we've got to say to ourselves is that we're not here for very long anyway, if we live to be 176. It's not long, relatively speaking.
Right.
And so it would be a good idea to use that time as wisely as we can to illuminate the planet as much as we can and to lift consciousness, global consciousness, as much as we can. We know that we're going back. We know that we're not coming back. So we may as well do something with the time that we've got left here that is constructive, that is illuminating for the rest of mankind.
Right. Well, you know, you and I tend to always be in sync. So this morning when I saw you post your live video reading from Your Life After Death, which everybody should read, chuckled because I had put up my post for the day, my spiritual note for the day, which was the timing of your death is always chosen by you. And I think that that's a hard concept for people to get, especially the way some people exit this planet. But I've often, you know, I've always known intuitively that you just can't interfere with a person's birth or death. It always goes the way that they planned it before they came in.
Yes, it is. It's an arc of energy. And I feel that there will be a tendency with that arc of energy for the person to exit this world in a certain way. There might be, you know, three or four options as to how that end manifests itself, but there is a certain karmic folding up with the end of a person's life. Having activated that arc of energy, we're supposed to see it out. We have to remember that each of us is here because we chose to be here. We either chose to be here because we wanted to come back, because there was something that we were missing, or something that we were pulled back into, or we came here because we wanted to help. We came here because we wanted to change things on Earth. So we did make the decision. We made the decision to have one last journey here, and we've got to see that journey out. And yes, it is tough here at the moment, and it is dark here at the moment, and it has been getting darker over the last few years. But that doesn't mean that we have to give up.
Right.
We have to bring in the light. We have to bring in elevated ways of thinking. We have to live by example. And we can do that in big ways globally, and we can do that in small ways with the person next door, the person at the bus stop, the person that we meet in the supermarket, just in our attitude, just so that we display a different way. And one of the best and most telling ways that we can make a difference is by stepping back from the anger that everyone else seems to have at the moment.
Well, I think the anger, would you say that the anger is also being reflected in what's happening on the earth? We've got volcanoes blowing, you know, for in Hawaii, we have one blowing in Guatemala. We've got floods, we've got fires, I mean, we have pestilence. Do you think it is a reflection of everybody's anger, or do you think that's creating the anger?
No, I think it's, as you said initially, it's a reflection of everyone's anger. That the thoughts that we put out, the jagged thoughts, the barbs, the anger vibrations that we put out, have an effect on the earth. We live in harmony, and I mean in harmony, in that we are part of the earth with the earth. And so everything we do affects the earth. And if you have millions, billions of people putting out anger, putting out a feeling of unrest, putting out violence, then the earth waits and waits and waits until it can wait no longer, and it has to react against that violence. It has to express, get rid of that vibration that's in its very atmosphere. And one of the favorite phrases from people when something happens, when there's a volcano or a tsunami or some other natural disaster, is to say, "Why God? Why God did you let this happen?" And to shake your fist at the sky and say, "Why God? Why have you let this happen?" He didn't let it happen. We made it happen. Mm. And that's a tough thing to realize, but it is the truth. If we en masse gave out harmonious thoughts, the earth would be harmonious. The earth would be calm. The earth would react in the way that it was supposed to originally with us. And so we have to send out love and harmony and peace to the earth if we want the earth to be loving and harmonious and peaceful back to us.
Right, right. Well, I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever sent as much Reiki or energy to the field as I've been doing in the last few months.
I'm sure.
You know, it's just everything is so crazy. And, you know, I just try to hold that light. It's hard to do, you know, especially to send that light to world leaders. It's extremely difficult, but I do it anyway. And it's, you know, I can understand how some people feel like giving up. And a lot of people have a lot of personal or physical problems that are also making them want to give up. And that's kind of the kind of questions that I've gotten from listeners for today's show. And I'd like to start with, you know, some of those. One of them is from a woman I know who happens to be losing her eyesight. And she said, "Would you please ask Michael if there's some secret to getting to the other side?" That's one of her questions.
A secret to getting to the other side?
Right. She says, because of your book, she's no longer afraid of death. Your books have changed her life. But she says she's just impatient because she can't stand the thought of going blind. So here we go again, you know, where people want out. I mean, you know, sometimes our lessons are harder than we want to handle.
Yes, I think in the ladies, what's the lady's name, please?
Her name is Susan.
Susan, I'm terribly sorry to hear that you've got this condition with your eyes, but remember that you can, to a certain extent, the extent that you believe, regenerate your body. Now, that will be difficult for you because you've probably got medical opinion that says otherwise. Your own psyche will say otherwise. But the truth is that if you bring light into your eyes, if you sit and meditate and see light beginning in your eyes, beautiful, wonderful white light, and then see that white light expanding and expanding in brilliance until you it becomes all that you can see. And if you affirm that your eyes are not going to go totally blind, And then believe that and thank whatever your idea of divinity is for that on a daily basis, sometimes on an hourly basis, however often you can manage, then you can improve your condition. That will seem like terrible advice to you at this time, but it is advice that works nevertheless. I've seen it work. I've done it myself, for myself. I've seen it work via my spiritual teacher, who has prayed over lumps and bumps that people have brought to her many years ago when she was with us, and those lumps and bumps disappeared the same day. Mm-hmm. I've healed conditions with my partner Jane that otherwise we would have taken to the doctor, simply by putting my hand over the area of the body that was affected and putting light into that area of the body. So don't give up, Susan. Don't give up. Just rely on the God that is within you and that ability that is within you to regenerate yourself. Light regenerates. Light perfects. Light brings us back into harmony. And it's that light that we've just been talking about that the earth needs too. So keep on keeping on, and let's see an improvement there.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sending her Reiki as well, and I'm going to continue to do that because we're all in this together. And I also want a few people want to know when Many Voices is going to be on audio.
It's not on audio. It is going to be on as an ebook in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, so they can pick it up for their Kindle internationally within the next couple of weeks. I'll be putting a post on Facebook as soon as that's happened. But we formatted it a few weeks ago, submitted it to eBookit, who format our books for us, and I've just had notification that it will go live in the next few days. It's a difficult one to do as an audiobook because you've got so many different personalities in there.
Right.
And they would all have to be, if read by me. So you wouldn't get any variation.
Right.
We could do with a cast of players to play the different guides. So never say never. It may come out as an audiobook, but certainly it will be out as an ebook within the next few days.
Okay, great. All right, another question, which is pretty damn interesting. Okay, this one is from Christine. She says, can someone who's old and sick still be alive by sticking or sucking somebody else's energy like a parasite? And if so, how do you end the vampire sucking the energy?
Well, there's a lot of this happens. And sometimes you have people who will deliberately take your energy because they sense that they feel better when they're around somebody that has more energy than they have. But oftentimes you have souls who don't realize that they are draining your energy. They might be ill themselves, or they're depressed, or there's a terrible situation in their lives. And when you come into contact with them, it's almost an automatic thing. And you can see it in that if you look in the mirror as you're talking to them, you will look worse and they will look better.
Right.
But there is, you can protect yourself. If you know that you're going into a situation where inevitably you're going to come across someone who has had an effect, a negative effect on your energies before, then you can see yourself wrapped in a silver bubble, as though you've put a mirror, an egg-shaped mirror, around you with silver on the inside and the mirrored surface on the outside. And also make sure that your chakras, the principal chakras, are shut whilst you're talking to that person. And ask for divine protection. But as I say, many times, it's not because the person is evil or doing something consciously to you. They just have situations in their life that they haven't learned how to deal with for themselves by bringing in the light that is at their core, at the core of their soul. And so automatically they look for it outside of themselves, as so many of us do. And if they come into contact with someone that has a lot of energy, that energy automatically migrates, leaving you exhausted. But you don't have to have it.
Right. You can absolutely learn how to shut down your chakra system, that's for sure. But do you think that somebody can cling onto someone else's energy, even though they themselves are dying, and prolong their life?
Sorry, is the question, can we sustain someone by donating our energy to them as they're dying? Is that what's being asked?
Well, the question is, if the person is dying and they're draining on your energy to stay alive,
Right.
Does that extend their life? Is that something they actually can do?
Well, it will certainly make them feel better to have you around. But in the dying stages of a life, you are completing that arc that we talked about earlier in the show. So it is inevitable at that stage that they are going to detach. They are going to detach from the physical body, and they are going to go back to the spiritual spheres. So they can feel better because you're around. They can invest in some of your energy, as it were. But it shouldn't normally make any difference to the time and the conclusion of the arc when they have to depart.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And let's see, we have a little bit different question from Patricia. She says, first of all, she loves the book, Many Voices in One Mission. Wanted to let you know that. And she said the part about what's in the past is in the past is very important. She said, because I know a lot of people that still live in the past. But that doesn't go to her question. Her question is what makes us more of who we are in this incarnation, our present DNA or our past life experiences?
Okay. Well, first of all, hello, Patricia. You're always supporting us on the show. It's great to hear from you again. What makes us more of who we are? It depends how you define who we are. If you look at the personality here in this lifetime, that's not necessarily who we are. That personality arms us with traits that we need to conquer or adapt or learn from in order that we can evolve as the souls that we really are. So for me, DNA is simply the decoration on the body. It is the weaving of the body, of a particular body. But a particular body, I can only liken to a particular car. You know, what sort of car do you want to drive?
Right.
And there are lots and lots of cars, but you wouldn't identify with them and say, I am that car. You would say, I'm the driver, not the car. And you are the driver. When you come back here, you draw spiritually on the experiences that you have had in past lives, plus the experiences that come to you, the challenges that come to you in this present life, in order for you to evolve away from those traits that tie you to the earth and from those traits that are holding you back spiritually. The key, if you've come here, and we have, is to illuminate ourselves and raise our vibrations. And we raise our vibrations. If we don't do it by meditation and by acknowledging that we are souls and that we are traveling through a physical landscape, then we have to do it through the hard knocks that come to us, the challenges, the signposts that come to us during our lives. And those signposts and hard knocks are not there to pull us down. They are there to lift us up by us learning from them. And so who we are is enhanced by the way that we approach and move through the challenges that come to us in life. Not, in my view, through DNA, which is simply a mechanism for forming the body that we have at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, many years ago, God, it has to be maybe 30 years ago, the New Age started teaching about ascension. And my intuition, looking at all of it, told me they were wrong. Okay,
yeah.
Because their idea of ascension and what they were teaching at the time, and probably still are, I don't really pay attention to it, was that the goal of being here was to be able to ascend out there. In other words, to be able to get your body from here to the other side.
Yeah.
But to me, ascension was always about assembling or reassembling everybody you ever were and moving as one being inside the body you're in right now.
Absolutely. I would absolutely agree with that, Maria. I've seen a lot about ascension that has made me, I don't know whether I want to laugh or want to cry about it.
Right.
Because as you say, there was, or perhaps still is, a New Age view that on a certain day, at a certain time, certain people will ascend bodily and leave the rest of us here in the mire.
Right.
Now, we are all part of each other. And we know through the mechanisms that are in place, the physical and the spiritual mechanisms that are in place, that we leave the body behind. It is only a shell. It's only that car that we're talking about. So in my view, there is never going to be a date when we physically move on to a higher plane, because that higher plane isn't physical. It's a rarefied vibration, and whilst we will look much as we look now, if we choose to, we will not have the heavy matter body that we have at this stage. So that worries me about the views of ascension that some people have. The other thing is that we cannot simply ignore, because we are one organism, we cannot simply ignore the rest of the souls that would be here were we to ascend, either physically or vibrationally. We cannot turn our back on the rest of the souls here. It's sort of a one-out, all-out situation. And we feel that pull. Whatever we feel physically at the moment, spiritually, when we get to the other side and we have elevated ourselves sufficiently, we feel that there is a pull and that there are people left still in the mire. Mm-hmm. And so this is why the spirit guides come back to help us. This is why angelic help is with us, because there is that feeling that until everybody is out, those spirits can't rest. And those spirits feel sorry for us, they feel upset about us, and they work day and night, in our terms, to get us out of this mess. And that's what we should be doing too, for all of us, for the one organism. So ascension physically, no. An ascension where we split off and half of us remain here, I don't see that either.
Right. Well, doesn't that kind of sound the same as religion, where each religion thinks they're the only ones that are going to get raptured or ascend and everybody else is just going to be left behind?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's amazing how many religions feel that there's a certain number that will go up and the rest will be damned forever.
Right.
And there's the religions that that say that, as you say, only our club will move up. It's just for us. We've got it right. We're sorted. We link to God. God loves us and not anybody else who is not of us. And I feel that's an abomination, an absolute abomination. See, there's this strange concept that religion and spirituality are the same thing, and they're not. And for many people, that's a very difficult idea to grasp, that religion and spirituality are not necessarily the same thing. Religion is, for the most part, man-made. Spirituality is inherent. It's what we are at core. We're born with it. Mm-hmm. We can't help but be spiritual. Whether we work negatively or positively, we are being spiritual, because we are, in truth, spiritual beings. So The trappings of religion, in many cases, are nothing to do with what we are at core.
Right, exactly. I mean, there are people that, you know, listen, I agree with you that we're born naturally spiritual, naturally curious, and with a natural knowing that society and the programs down here immediately removed from us by the time we're in elementary school.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. We are conditioned to not make waves. We're conditioned not to question. We're conditioned to fit in to society. And we're conditioned, via society, to fit into the field and to feed the field with more of the status quo so that the field remains negatively charged. I should explain, if there are new listeners, that we're talking about the field of human consciousness.
Right.
That we all contribute to by our thoughts and motives on a daily basis.
Right.
And that field has been set to negative, which is why we've got the Earth that we see at the moment, for millennia. It's been set to negative since the time of what Joseph describes as the fall, an experiment, if you will, that went wrong and plunged us into a kind of spiritual darkness. But we did this, and we're still suffering as a result of it. But yeah, absolutely right. Society, we are programmed to fit into society. Don't question, don't ask, don't look at things in a different way, don't use your mind, don't
right.
use your heart, don't use your spirit. And that makes more of the same. And witness the world we've got.
Right. Well, you know, many years ago, when I was really stepping up to what I was here to do, it came at a high cost to me, a very high cost. Friendships, relationships, everything. And I remember one day I was crying. It wasn't just talking to spirit, I was crying to spirit. And the voice in my head said, "Why are you crying?" And I said, because everybody I love has turned their back on me. And the answer I got reminds me of what you just said a few minutes ago, Michael. It said, you're not here to make friends. You're here to make waves.
Yes, that's wonderfully put.
And
wonderfully
that really put. Snapped me right out of that pity party I was having for myself. And I was able to move forward.
Yes.
You know, and then I'm reading your book, Many Voices, One Mission, and I have to tell you, I find some chuckles all the way through because you and I have so many things that are so similar that sometimes it's kind of crazy, I have to say that. But when I was reading a passage by Silva Starr and the Big Indian, this was on, page 50, and I believe it was Spiritual Starr talking about this particular book. He said, the purpose of the book was to act as a kind of spiritual alarm clock. And I can tell you, since I was in my 30s, some of the beings that come through to me refer to me as the cosmic alarm clock. So I had to laugh. And then, of course, Silver Star goes on to say something I've been telling people for so long that I'm bored saying it. The journey of the soul isn't outwards, but inwards. And people are still looking outside themselves for those answers, for someone else to tell them this is the way, instead of going within. Could that be contributing to why people are so fearful and so disgusted now?
Absolutely. We are taught from an early age that we should be dependent on others. We're never taught that we can be dependent on ourselves and the God within, the divine within, for the solutions to everything that challenges us in our lives. And we're taught to think from the mind, of course, because that is the physical organ that seems to sort out our problems. But in reality, it's the heart that we should be going to. We have two minds. That's an absolute fact. We have a mind in the head that is linked to this earth and is a fight or flight mechanism. And we have a mind in the heart that links to the divine, that links to what we really are. And that mind in the heart, if we go to it and practice going to it on a daily basis, we can ask anything of. We can see the truth of situations. We can take our challenges inwards, into the heart center, and reside there in the heart center until we get an answer as to how to proceed. And unlike the physical mind that only seeks to survive, the heart mind never lets us down.
Right.
If we keep our emotions out of that exercise of going to the heart mind, it never lets us down. It provides us with the truth, with a clear vision, and the way to proceed in any challenge, in any situation. And it also allows us to tap into that healing light that we were talking about earlier that heals us and restores us and reharmonizes our body with a higher vibration. And so there is a wonderful benefit in learning to go to the heart mind. And we should be doing it, each of us, on a daily basis rather than looking outside. This is not to say that we don't need people, that we don't seek others' advice. Of course we do. But we also go to our source first and seek our own advice, our spiritual advice. And that gives us such strength in all life's challenges, to be able to go in and say, what do I think? Never mind what anybody else thinks.
Right.
What do I think? Not from the mind that will seek advice from others and then do whatever it wants to do, will ally itself with the advice that resonates with what it wants to do in the first place. What do I think from the heart? What do I think from the core? What do I think from my spirit, from the eternal angelic being that I am? And then life begins to change for us, and we, for the first time, take control, which is a marvelous, marvelous freedom.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I have a native friend in Florida, and he said that One of the trips most people don't want to make is the shortest trip of all. It's the 12 inches from their mind to their heart.
Extremely well put, yes.
And, you know, that's another thing that I've always remembered. I have so many weird things that just stick in my head. But it is really the truth. And then I forget which one. It might have been the Big Indian talking or Silver Star. When he says, you see, life is a circle. Now, I have to tell you that you know my background somewhat, and after I left the Jehovah's Witness organization, I was still looking, I was still seeking and searching. And I remember going to so many different religions, and I will say that I really liked the black churches the most because the music was great. But I never found anything that made sense to me until I met Sunbear and I saw the medicine wheel, which of course is a circle. And it totally changed my whole life. So to see how many references, not just in this book, to other books, you have to the circle, and that life is a circle, again, makes me kind of giggle a little bit. I'm like, okay, this is a lot of confirmation for me.
Yeah. Joseph O describes God as the dot within the circle, and describes the dot within the circle as an ancient symbol for God. And that we are enclosed within God. We are part of God. Our aura, if you could see our aura, of course, and you can, Maria, is also circular. The passage we take from life to death is not a straight line. It's a circle. It brings us back to our start point, but with a new set of values, a new set of vibrations, and then we move into other circles or spheres of existence and move through those. So that the whole of the physical universes and spiritual universes are based on the circle, on God encapsulating, embracing, encompassing us, and we being within that light and that creative being.
Right. Well, obviously, many Aboriginal tribes have been familiar with that because they've all used a circle of some sort or a medicine wheel of some sort, which always has a center stone to represent the creator. And, you know, these are the people call pagans and don't know what they're talking about. But obviously they know more than most religions. Michael, we need to take a short break. Stay with us. Michael and I will be right back.
Spiritual professor is a name some of Maria's students and clients refer to her as. After a consultation or class with Maria, some have gone as far as calling her the Force or the Oracle. Maria is simply a woman, a mother, and grandmother who was born with a keen natural intuition. She's got a lot of life experience and she's a constant student herself. This is what qualifies her to help those who are on their journey and need some direction. Some students visit her in person, others on the phone or on Skype. Maria will work with you on your own timeline, guiding you down your best possible path. You can learn to balance the mind, body, and spirit in what seems to be a world gone mad. As David Icke says about Maria, Maria's the real deal, extremely intuitive but with her feet firmly on the ground, out there, but down here, no bullshit. Whatever you need in this part of your journey is what Maria will help you with. She'll give you the tools you need to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See private consultations with Maria on the site at meria.net and pick the one that resonates with you. You are not alone. The professor is in at meria.net. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to The Bigger Picture with myself and Michael. Michael's work is found at josephspeaks.com. There's a live link here. It's the best place to get his books. Some of you are saying that your book was delayed. You ordered this new copy. You haven't gotten it yet. Just get in touch with Michael or Jane, and they will find out what's going on with your copy of the book.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't work for Michael. Michael's on the other side of the world, even though we sound like we're in the same room. We're not. What I like
I
is...
Should also,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Maria. I should also mention that recently, the first 5 books have become available, printed in the United States, and available through Amazon.com. So we had remarks on Amazon that were nothing to do with us, saying, how can these books be so expensive? Well, in the past, they've been so expensive because unscrupulous merchants have been taking them in and selling them for exorbitant prices in the States.
Right.
They are now available at the price of any other paperback, on Amazon.com. So if you search for my name on the Joseph Communications, you'll find the first five books there, and the others will be added quite soon.
Great. Okay, so we get back to the book. We might end up we might end up reviewing this book page by page at the rate I'm going. But you come back to the Big Indian, and he talks about what I consider one of the best spiritual movies of all times, What Dreams May Come with Robin Williams.
Yes, a fantastic film.
And I don't know how many of my clients that I talk to who are in a soulmate relationship or who have lost a soulmate, who can't understand, how many of them I have referred to watch that movie.
Yes.
When I saw it, it was interesting. I was working, of all places, in Las Vegas with a business partner doing golf tournaments. And one afternoon, we decided to slip into the movie theater, and we saw What Dreams May Come. And as a visual artist, I didn't know what I liked better, the artistry in the movie that I was seeing in front of my eyes, or the spiritual knowledge and truth in that movie. I wanted to stay, see the credits. Who wrote this movie was in my mind. I said, whoever wrote this movie knew what they were talking about. You know, especially that part.
Richard Matheson.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Richard Matheson used to write for The Twilight Zone.
Well, I just thought it was amazing, just like that movie Ghost. You know, there's so many, you know, that movie with Meryl Streep and Albert Brooks, you know, where they go to heaven and you can see their past life stuff. But the most important thing was, I'm trying to think, what was his name? Cuba Gooding. Of all people, Cuba Gooding is Robin Williams' spirit guide, which you see the humor in there. The humor was great, and how people shift into characters that you would in your earthly form relate to, even though that's not who they are, you know, how they take on form. But I remember when Cuba Gooding is walking him through and he sees his funeral service, and Cuba Gooding shows up and says, "What's wrong? You just died. You're not dead." You know, something similar to that. And it just blew me away. I mean, everything about that movie was exceptional. And then here it is in your book by Big Indian. So for me, that's confirmation that I'm not the only one that sees what I see in these movies.
No, and the first time we watched this together, Jane and myself, about 12 years ago, at the end, the Big Indian turned up and said, "And that's you too."
Right.
Not the reincarnation bit, but, you know, the souls.
Absolutely. Well, you know, at the end, when after he's traveled to hell to find her, and then they decide to do it again, which at that point, I'm questioning their sanity in the movie.
Absolutely. So were we.
Right. I'm like, oh, God, don't do it. And it was just very funny when she says, "Well, I'm going to go down to New Jersey. How are you going to find me in New Jersey?" And she says, "I found you in hell, didn't I?" But I said to myself, hell, New Jersey, almost the same thing. Being a New Yorker, that's a long-standing joke between New York and New Jersey. But you see them, you know, choosing to come back with the excuse that they get bored or life's too perfect on the other side. Yes. And I think a lot of people misteach that too as the reason for reincarnation, because perfection gets too boring. That's like saying there's no money in peace.
Well, that perfection is a moving target, and there's always something new to discover in the spiritual spheres that we move through. And we could spend in earthly terms 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years contemplating one aspect of creation, but also how exciting it will be to add to creation, which of course that is what we do now, although it's masked. We create every day of our lives. We create the circumstances around us. We pull certain situations towards us. But imagine freed from the physical body and freed from the restrictions of the earth plane, being able to create in conjunction with other members of the angelic host, because that is what we really are, planets, spheres of influence that we can then visit to travel through in order to gain more experience. To be able to create stars, to be able to create planets, to be able to create situations that other angelic beings can move through so that they can add to their experience. And always we're taking this experience, this enhanced experience, back to the Godhead and making the Godhead more. Adding experience to the Godhead. Now that compared to perhaps going to the cinema or going to a 9-to-5 job in an office, is quite a leap, isn't it?
Right.
And how could you get bored with that?
Exactly. I know. I would say, somebody just please peel me a grape at that point. Peel me a grape. I need a vacation. You know, I think about my father, and even though he was, you know, religious, one thing I remember is when he was old and he was getting ready to cross, he basically said, "Don't be sad when I die. Throw a party. I want everybody to wear red and have a good time," because he looked forward to seeing his parents again. I find that even when I'm sending my Reiki at night, either to people that have asked for it or I'm sending it to the field, I also send it to all my friends and my other families in spirit too, because to me, they're just as real as people here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we do look forward to seeing our mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers again, and our pets again, because they are part of creation as well.
Right.
But also imagine the spiritual family, as you just said, that we have on the other side.
Right, so many.
People that we will instantly recognize as part of our close soul group. People who have been on edge, as it were, for a lifetime, hoping that we would get through it as we're supposed to get through it and bring back the results and the success that we're supposed to bring back as a result of this physical life.
Right.
So there are parents that we know, there are relatives that we know, but there are also soul group members, part of an extended but very, very close family that we know as well, waiting to greet us and welcome us back into the heart of the soul group that we are, in fact, spiritually a part of.
Exactly. So I don't just limit it to people I've known in this lifetime.
No, indeed.
And I'm trying to remember which one of your books. It might have been Your Life After Death, but, and I'm going to just surmise it. So if I'm saying it wrong, I'm sure you'll correct me. But I remember at one point where you described it so beautifully, and the way I remember it is when someone's getting ready to cross over. Okay, so I'll use myself as an example. A voice goes out, or a clarion call. "Hey, everybody out here, Maria Heller's getting ready to come over." And it gets announced and passed on. And then whoever wants to meet you shows up for that. Am I correct?
That's correct, yes. That's correct. Nobody ever dies alone. That's one of the misconceptions, isn't it? That we die alone. Mm-hmm. We couldn't be surrounded by more people if we tried when we die. We might be alone here. One second we're alone. The next second we are with people that we love, people we recognize, people we harmonize with, and we're in a completely different landscape. Yes, somebody is has agreed to come and collect us and say, "Come on, off you go. We're now ready to go into this new life or this old life that now has new aspects because of what you've learned whilst you were on Earth." So an exciting prospect.
Right.
A tear-jerking prospect, really, a highly emotional prospect, that we are reunited with people that we love, that haven't gone anywhere at all, really.
Right.
We're the ones that are stuck here. They've gone back home, and they're waiting to greet us.
Right. So as you say in this new book, passing shouldn't be a thing of fear. It should be a thing of joy, because you're finally going home. And there's lots of people waiting for you. And it reminds me of that old 60s song, Rock and Roll Heaven. You know, every time I see another artist from my day crossing over, I'm like, wow, rock and roll heaven just got even better.
Yes, indeed.
I'd rather be there than here sometimes, too. So I understand how people feel. You know, I had a friend, and she was a great spiritual person and teacher. And we were very close, and we were very synchronistic. Although she was, you know, many years older than me. We were very, really very much the same. And sometimes my gift and my teaching used to scare her. So what happened was, when she was ready to cross over, it just happened. She was in Florida. And one of my other students was there helping her cross over. And she got on, you know, I was on the phone with her, talking to her. And this was like minutes before she died, Michael. And she was strong. She was brave. She was looking forward to it. And I remember one of the things, the last thing I said to her was, "Remember, wherever you go in the universe, I will find you."
Yes.
And she said to me, "If anybody can do it, you can." And she laughed. And that was our last conversation. And she died rather peacefully.
Yes.
So, you know, to me, I call on the spirits of the people I do know on the other side to welcome my friends when they leave here, because I'm still here and can't do it.
Yeah.
Now, is that something everybody can do?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The only thing that can prevent us from being with the people we love is our own perception, is our own, the barriers that we put up sometimes. As an example, and I think I've mentioned this in a past show, but my father, Italian, his mother, a fierce Catholic, went to church twice a day, every day. And when she passed over, she found herself in an empty church of her own making, of her own creation. And initially, she knelt at the altar and prayed and thought, this is heaven. But as the days went past, she kept doing this. And my father went into that church on the spirit side and tried to get her out of there, but she was convinced that this was heaven and this was how it was supposed to be. So she cut herself off from her family and her own son by her blinkered beliefs via her chosen religion. Mm. Now, whether she is out of that church now, I don't know. But the last time we talked about it, my father said, there's nothing further I can do. Until she changes her mind, until by volition she comes out of that church and wants to see more,
right.
Can't do anything.
Right, and so sometimes people can people can stay there for a long time. You know, I think whatever religion or their belief system is makes them create what they were expecting, and they get stuck there for sometimes thousands of years for no reason.
Absolutely. As we understand time, thousands of years, which is such a sad occurrence, when if they passed over open-minded and expecting to see the people around them that they knew, then all that trauma could be avoided. But this is back to what we're saying about society and religion, and that I mean, we spend a lifetime, many of us, being indoctrinated by both society and religion. And we shut down our spiritual channels. We shut down our communication channels. We shut down our psychic channels. Right. Because we are so ingrained in this life and the way that we are told this life must operate and must unfold for us. I would encourage everyone listening to this show to be as open-minded as they can be. Never to close the mind. Never to be closed to new suggestions. To new aspects of spirituality that will come to them if they are open-minded. And if you are open-minded, you will find that you believe or acknowledge something this year, and then next year you will have moved on from that point and say, well, I believed that in 2018, but now my knowledge is enhanced and I believe something more in 2019. And in 2020, you will have further spiritual thoughts as your spiritual mind and your persona expand and your vibration lifts. But that can't happen if you're closed-minded. Always please be open-minded. Not for my sake, but for yours.
Right. Well, you know, I find that there are certain things that I have done to help people cross over where they don't have to go to what you refer to in the book as an initiation point. Or to be stuck in a place like that. What I know and what I find with Reiki, most people that have their Reiki attunements can cross over without any stopovers because it raises their vibration. But even with my own mom, you know, when she died, I didn't want her to linger in, who knows, some Pentecostal nightmare of her own choosing. So what I brought with me was lapis lazuli and moonstone wrapped in silk with some sage. And I knew she wanted to be cremated. And I told them to make sure that got burned with her as an offering to spirit to help her cross straight over. And of course, they told me that that would be the case. And it was interesting because she came through right away after that, you know, with fine and, you know, that type of stuff. Thanking me, thanking me for what I did. So there are things we can do to help people. They don't have to be out there twisting in La La Land. You know, my granddaughter, again this week, she's a Reiki master, has been since she's 7. She's 23 years old now, Michael. She has had more people literally drop dead in front of her than anybody I know. Okay. So she went to go tubing down the river and this guy starts drowning in front of her. She tries to give him CPR because she's certified and she's been a lifeguard most of her life. But she said he was already dead. She could tell he was already dead. And I said to her, did you give him Reiki? And she said, you know, she gets insulted when I even ask because, of course. And I said, Grandma, why does this keep happening to me? And I keep telling her, if you knew it was your time, wouldn't you rather die next to a Reiki master that can help you cross over? Yeah. Then, you know, just Joe Blow. But it is kind of weird that this continues to happen to her.
That's obviously part of her mission, Maria, isn't it, to help these people?
Absolutely. What else could it be? Whether it's dogs, yeah. Whether it's people. I mean, she can just go, you know, to have some fun. You know, she was at a trampoline park. They actually have those here in the States. And this kid jumps into this giant trampoline, snaps his neck, and dies right at her feet.
Oh, my goodness.
And she reiki'd him, and then, like, 2 days later, he came through and thanked her.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this isn't... Listen, thank God she picked the right grandmother, because somebody else might have put her on some kind of drugs or something. But, you know, there are a lot of people just checking out, and for whatever reason, they like to check out around her.
Yes. Obviously why she's here, one of the reasons that she's here. I have an amusing image that I remember when my father died, and that might sound a contradiction in terms as to what was happening at the time. But when my father died, I saw him in a canoe, uh-huh. And on one side of him was sitting the big Indian, and on the other side of him was sitting an Inuit guide. And my father was in the middle, looking younger, but very, very bewildered. And they were sitting there to make sure that he got to his destination. And then in the ensuing years, he would come through periodically. And I could see the change in him each time he came through as he discovered more about his potential and his spirituality. Initially, he would come through with a guide who uh-huh. would speak on his behalf, who would affect the communication between us. And then as the years passed, he would come through by himself. And some of the things that used to bother him on Earth, he would say, I don't go there anymore. He used to say, I don't go to Italy anymore. There's so much trouble there with the family that I don't want to be bothered with that anymore. And I could see him going to lectures on the spirit side, finding out about the use of color, about the use of creative light. And it was a joy to see him evolving and moving on from what his Earth life had been.
Right. Well, you know, my mother used to say, there is no hell, this is it. So maybe she was right, but she was Sicilian, and we all know how negative they can be. But
indeed, yeah.
You know what, the older I get, the more sense she seems to make. That's really scary. You talk about in Many Voices, One Mission, an initiation point. Now, other writers will refer to it as nirvana. Or, you know, life in between. The initiation point brings to mind, you know, there's a lot of people who are still very much alive who won't even fill out, say, a living will or a trust or anything like that. Almost as if they feel if they don't get their papers in order, they won't die.
Right.
So if they're not prepared to die on the physical end, how can they possibly prepare for what awaits them once they do cross over?
Yeah, you're talking about the collection points that are
right.
in the book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, there are problems with a lot of people in that they, because they are so steeped in the earthly life, they expect, if they are going to die, to undertake a journey. And this journey can take many forms. And the spirit guides involved use many constructs of energy, many illusions of energy, to get people across to what we would describe as the far shore or the other side. Mm-hmm. And the one that I've worked with is it looks like a liner. It is something that the big Indian worked with for about 200 years. And it is a beautiful white liner. And you can see people assembling on the top deck. And the top deck doesn't have any superstructure. It just has benches on a polished wood deck. And the people line up and they go up into the onto the top deck. And they sit there in rows on the benches. And you can see them in various states of distress. Some of them are bloodied because they've been in an accident. Some of them are in their pajamas or night dresses because they have died in hospital. Some of them are in suits. They're of all ages, and they're all fearful. And then the boat sets off, and it moves across a sea of light. It's not an ocean as we would recognize an ocean.
Right.
And as they move across to the far shore, to the destination, people begin to assemble on that shore, which in itself is an illusion. It's a way to help the minds of the departed cope with what's happening to them. But the people are real enough, the spirits are real enough, and they begin to recognize family members, you know, mums and dads and brothers and sisters and husbands and wives. And it's amazing to see the change that comes over the people on the boat. The bandages fall away, the blood disappears, they become younger, some of them suddenly appear in spirit robes, and from being apprehensive and fearful at the beginning of the journey, they are delighted to get back, to get off up that far shore and to reunite with their family members.
Right.
The only ones who are disappointed are the ones who have to come back.
Right.
The ones whose time it isn't yet, and so they've been momentarily detached from their bodies, but not totally, and have to come back. They're the ones who are disappointed, the ones who come on the return journey back to the earth plane, to the heavier vibration.
Absolutely, and you hear that from, you know, people that come back from a near-death experience. You know,
yes,
they loved where they were and didn't want to come back, but then here they are. You know, it kind of reminds me, in the 60s, there was a song called People Get Ready. I don't know if you remember it, Michael. It was, you know, fairly big here in Seoul.
I probably would if I heard it, Maria.
What?
I probably would if I heard it.
Well, it was, you know, God, no one should ever want me to sing, but I'll give you a few lines. It was
I'm not suggesting you sing.
It was,
what I'm saying
it
is,
was,
if I heard the record, I'd probably say,
right.
Oh, yes. I
but, you know, he talked about the train the same way you write about the boat. He said, people get ready. There's a train a-coming. You don't need a ticket. You just get on board.
Yes.
And it's a soul spiritual group. I don't remember who sang it, but I'll be looking it up after the show. And that's really the truth of it. You don't need a ticket. You just get on board and you thank the Lord was basically the way it goes. And that's what, you know, a lot of these thoughts come through my mind when I'm reading your work. But anyway.
I've seen all kinds of collections. I've seen people collected in rowing boats. I've seen one person was collected in a limousine. This was a person who was talking to me and wouldn't go across, but he'd always wanted to go in a luxury limousine.
Oh.
And he'd never been in one. And the spirit worlds obliged. A guy duly came for him, dressed as a chauffeur. There was a magnificent black shiny limousine. He got in and off he went to his next destination.
Wow. Well, at least he got his limo ride. For me, I want to fly there.
Did.
I want to fly there on my own. I want wings to sprout from my back, and I want to fly there at about 500 miles an hour.
Yes, as quickly as we possibly can. Yes.
Exactly. Michael, thank you so much for today's show. And as
a great
usual,
delight, Maria, as always.
Right. So you take good care, and we'll talk soon.
And you. God bless. Take care.
You too. Michael, Michael Rakia, check him out at josephspeaks.com. There actually is hope, but it's most of it's on the other side right now. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the show as much as we did, and I'll be back tomorrow with the news. And by the way, Richie Allen and I will not be together on the show today. We had to reschedule that for next Tuesday, so stay tuned. Thanks again for supporting the show.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.